So this is another program that I'm involved with. So I provide the programmatic oversight for all the farm-to-school stuff under SNAP Ed, and my colleague Carla does all the nutrition education stuff. So I'm a hands full with that, but I also do this other awesome thing, which is specialty crop programming for small farmers. So here's our state. Here's the sad state of affairs, and if you talk to anybody that belongs to the greatest generation, they'll tell you all sorts of stories about what Florida looked like where it's mostly green. My father-in-law included, and this is where we are today. And this was 1993, so you can imagine how much change our state has had with 90 million visitors a year and 19 million residents. We don't have a lot of green left, so we're a very urbanized state. And that, you know, that poses some challenges, because if you notice from our first speaker, sir in the blue shirt, that I forgot your name, Florida was also one of those dark green states, just like California, in terms of numbers of farmland, you know, acres of farmland lost. So we're up there in the red zone. We do have a robust ag industry, though, and so the value of agricultural products sold per farm is really clustered down there, and you know, around Miami-Dade, Palm Beach County, Broward County. These are densely populated areas, and of course, you know, anybody selling direct to consumers can certainly charge a lot more. But we also have a lot of tomato production there, that's a very profitable crop to grow in Florida. So I mentioned this earlier, but a lot of our product is shipped out of state. It's also shipped internationally and to the Caribbean. In fact, Florida is the Caribbean's major supplier. We supply more food to the Caribbean than any other entity. And when the Panama Canal expands, that's going to get really interesting. So as a whole, our industry has about $2 billion a year in receipts. And the majority of those 47,500 farms are small farms. So 47,000 minus the 5,000 farms that, you know, are big with sales greater than 1,000, that's who we're working with. So we've got about 42,000 farms that we work with. We have done some mapping. Our Department of Ag has some great maps up now under their Healthy Florida initiative. They paid for a GIS consultant to make some beautiful maps, and we use those in our programming. This one is from the Know Your Food Compass map, but you can see that most of our small farmers who are selling direct, and that's nearly all of them, are clustered around the coast, because everybody wants to live in the beach in Florida, and that's where most of our population densities are. So we have a lot of farmers markets in the state. So who are these farmers? Well, we did a survey in 2007, and we discovered that our small farmers are actually younger than the national average. They're closer to 50, and now they're even younger. I'm sure if we did that survey again, we would find that we have a greater percentage of beginning farmers than any other state on the eastern seaboard. And we were the only state in 2002 and 2007 to actually have an increase in farm numbers in the eastern U.S. And we were one of two in the 2012 survey. So collectively as a group, 15% of the ag receipts come from small farms, which I have to say is greater than any other ag sector. So when we first started this program 10 years ago in 2005, we were known as the piddlers. And I know you guys know what I'm talking about. We were the hobby farmers that didn't have any impact economically, and I argued till I turned blue, and finally I got numbers to show that, you know what, the tomato growers contribute like 11%, and everybody thinks about tomatoes as Florida, but the small farmers are actually comprising a bigger sector of that, so we think that's pretty cool. And there's a lot of definitions of small farms. We just go with the USDA definition. We have a lot of beginning farmers in our state. Many of them are young, but we do have a lot of lifestyle and retiree farms. And we do have a fair diversity of farmers. Miami-Dade has the highest concentration of Hispanic farmers in any other county in the nation. So a lot of our publications are translated into Spanish, and we do have a lot of bilingual instructors that, you know, when we're on farms and we do programs, we'll have translators, and that's pretty fun. So we know that Not surprisingly, many of them come from a non-farming background. We've dealt with a lot of negative stereotypes from our state agencies as well as from our bigger farmers and people within our own institution. So it's been a massive educational process, socially, culturally, every other way you can think of. So there's our team at the very beginning, and we were fortunate enough to get a $100,000 legislative budget line to begin this program, and that is because the farm clientele, 42,000 of them, made it very clear that their needs were not being met, and that's a big number. So what they lack in economic power, they can certainly make up in voting power. So we got some money. We invested that in infrastructure and professional development, and as a result, our team really formed. I mean, we are bonded at the hip, and it's a really cool team to work with. So we have a 10-year strategic plan. We have a 2.5-day retreat every 5 years. Our next one is next month. We have local and state-level advisory committees. Our advisory committees are very diverse. They include farmers, industry people, agency people, NGOs, advocacy groups, consumers. I mean, we intentionally make these things really diverse because that's our program, and we need to make sure that all their voices are met. So we report under our food systems group in administration. So at the end of the year, all the small farm stuff and all the farm to school stuff gets reported under our food systems structure of reporting. So we have a number of programs that span from farm to fork. And some of these are national programs that we've adopted, like Annie's Project, and some are just programs that we have developed on the ground over the years of partnering with our colleagues. So we have had a state conference annually for 6 years that attracts 600 to 800 farmers. Our group got burnt out of that, and so I turned the tide, and we've been funded by our block grant program every year for, this is our 8th year. They've been very generous with us, and we are the token small farms, thing that they check off on USDA, I think, but who cares? We're having a great time, and our farmers really appreciate the extra support that they get because of that funding. So we're moving now to regional conferences. We'll have one in each of the 5 extension districts in our state. And we also have these small farm working groups because we know that farmers love to work with other farmers. And so we have monthly potlucks on farms. It's a farm tour followed by an invited speaker and an open sit in a circle, talk about whatever you want session, which sometimes is complaining, sometimes it's a lot of rapid fire one-liners. So they're really dynamic and they're always interesting and fun and useful. So we've been able to serve a lot of folks, and I think the most important thing that has probably made our mark is this annual conference. It took us 2 years to plan the first one. These are a little bit out of order. It took us 2 years to plan the first one, and our goal was to get the industry to know each other. We realized that our farmers didn't know each other, and the agencies really had no clue what our small farmers were doing. And so I have to say, after the 6 years of doing that, we were very successful. I mean, we achieved that mission, and now we look at across the state and we think, there's nobody that's really more than 2 degrees of separation from somebody else that they know and that we know, and that's a really beautiful thing. So here's some shots of our farmer-to-farmer networking meetings, some of the farmers that we work with. And here's, like I say, they're out of order, sorry. And here's some features of our conference. So we've been able to, service 4,000 participants over that 6 years, and I'd have to say that we were successful only because we had an event planner, and we were able to do all kinds of really awesome stuff. We got Aramark to buy local foods. That was a first, so we developed a whole booklet for how to buy local foods for your event, which they love, and they still have it. And Chef Tony Donnelly, God bless him, because he was really on fire for it, and he made it happen for us. And we give farmer awards, and it's just been a lot of fun. So here we are with the regional conferences. We have funding to do this. Also, we have funding to do farmers market manager food safety training, and we have a formal evaluation process. Okay, so there's just some pictures. of what we do. We're definitely focused on helping growers take advantage of the local market. We do a lot of, you know, vegetable variety trials, teach them about season extension, and then we make sure that that information is available to them 24/7 on a variety of web tools. So we use every tool that we can in our toolbox. And food safety in particular, and I'm going to move through these within a minute, has been a really critical program for us. FSMA is a train that is coming, and you cannot ignore it. So we partnered with Primus. We use their free online tool to help our farmers plan their food safety plan. This is an intensive 2-day deal where the first day they're in the classroom, the second day they're out in the field looking at stuff. We do we do these "Is your farm ready for a third-party audit" tours, which are a little nerve-wracking, but they've been really great. And many of our farmers have gone on to get third-party audits, and so that's really great. And we do a pre- and post-test. We've tracked their knowledge gain, and the farmers that have participated have consistently ranked this in the top 5% of all extension programs they've ever attended. So we know we're making a difference, which is really good. And there's Dr. Galindo. He's our amazing evaluator. We love him. And so there you are. There's some of our farmers, and they're a very integral part of our program. So we think that we've made a difference. We have data to say that we've made a difference. We have a lot more work to do. It's a big group and a lot of challenges. And that's all I'm going to say. Okay.
We have time for one or two questions.
Yes.
In an earlier presentation, for one of the California presentations, they had pretty clear numbers on minimum acreage size and crop diversity related to farm viability. Wondering if you guys have that sort of information with such a different state.
We have the survey information, but I don't have the economic analysis. So we know that most of our farmers have 4 crops. We thought we were going to get big answers, like 12. But they really, most of them just have 4. And then they may have a few that they tinker in seasonally. The average farm size in Florida, we found that doesn't really make a difference, because we can have an acre of tomatoes making close to $1 million, or we can have an acre of something else, you know, like small ruminants. I mean, it's apples and oranges, so that depending on your crop, the land area doesn't really matter. So we have these micro urban farms that are making a killing because they're in the middle of the city, and people pay top dollar for this stuff. And then that same farm out in rural Union County it's a hobby farm, you know. So context is really important in Florida.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.